What the hell was that?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Are you there?
We gotta get rid of this kook. I got an idea.
Greatness at its finest.
Welcome to the Rodcast.
Wonder who that could be.
On the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260.
Come on, why you want to play a brother like that?
And hornfm.com.
Is there a problem back there?
With the Longhorns play and Austin talks sports.
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. A lot of things I want to get to here. We're going to cram a lot into the next hour of the show. You can always be a part of it. Hit us up on the Specs text line, 512-337-3776. I am at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. My man Brian at The Thing Radio. He's working hard back there, twisting and tweaking the dials. You can hit him up at The Thing Radio in the Twitterverse. All right, we'll start off. We'll give you the latest on the Maryland press conference, where the athletic director and the president announced the latest in their investigation into the death of Jordan McNair, a young offensive lineman there in early May. The death was in June 13, but I believe June 13th, late May, is when he actually collapsed. They have taken responsibility for that. And maybe that gives us a little bit of a hint as to what the future of DJ Durkin, the head coach who has been on administrative leave, what it will be with Maryland. We'll get into that. My man Brian has pulled some sound from that press conference of Wallace Lowe, the president, and Damon Evans, the athletic director. Also, I want to get into some Texas football discussion. We'll go behind the Burner's curtain. Exactly that Maryland press conference will lead us into Texas football discussion, because Texas leads off the season playing the Maryland Terrapins, and there was some interesting news coming from the 40 acres. Speaking of Texas football, and we'll get into this a little bit more when we go behind the Burner's curtain, but two transfers in the defensive backfield at DBU, Eric Cuffey and John Bonney, who is from DB High in Houston, Lamar, where I'm from, where I started the pipeline for these young DBs. And hey, you had three of them in this class of 2018, Anthony Cook and Deshaun Jameson, Vontae Woodard. You had three of those guys just from Houston, Lamar. One of the members of DBU, who's also a member of DB High, John Bonney, he's transferring. There is a statement made from both players. We'll read that, and we talk Texas football and go behind the curtain a little bit and talk about now the depth issues for the defensive backfield. I knew we had depth issues at linebacker, but now the depth at defensive back for Texas is, it's not thinning out, but it's even more inexperienced than even to start the season. It was going to be a pretty inexperienced depth issue for Texas, an experienced depth issue for Texas in the defensive backfield anyway, because you had so many guys, Houghton Hill and Deshaun Elliott and Antoine Davis and Jason Hall, who left earlier, graduated last year. But you still had a lot of depth, which is inexperienced depth, with that 2018 class coming in. Now, John Bonney, who was one of the only guys who had played safety and corner for you, he was really versatile, had a lot of starts under his belt, a lot of playing time under his belt. You know, he's now transferring. Eric Cuffey didn't really give you any significant, impactful reps, but still there was depth for him being an upperclassman, both of those guys transferring. Now you have to expedite the development of those young DBs. So that becomes now a priority for Todd Orlando and for Tom Herman, which may be a good problem. And out of necessity, it may be a good problem to have. So we'll talk about that. We'll also get into our Reliable Automotive Horn Top 20 USC on Texas schedule as well. They're number 14, so we'll dive into that coming up a little bit later on the show. There is some Cowboys talk that I want to talk about, because Ezekiel Elliott admitted he's watching some offseason film of one of the greatest running backs in NFL history, and he may be watching them to inspire him to expand his skill set as a running back. But it may not be up to him. It may be up to the Cowboys to really maximize it. It's something that I've brought up on the show many of times, but now I'm glad that not only Ezekiel Elliott may be considering it, but the Dallas Cowboys are considering something that I've brought up on the show several months ago, actually. All right, so we'll get into that, too, coming up. We'll talk some NFL news, notes, and nuggets. You can always be a part of the show. The Specs text line, 512-337-3776. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse, my man Brian at The Thing Radio. All right, let's start with the Maryland story, that the latest in it, because the athletic director and the president, William Wallace Lowe, excuse me, the president and the athletic director, Damon Evans, had a press conference at 1 p.m. our time. And here is the president, Wallace Lowe, talking about the death of Jordan McNair and how the university and the training staff were at fault, but them taking full responsibility for it.
The university accepts legal and moral responsibility for the mistakes that our training staff made on that fateful workout day of May the 29th, which of course led subsequently to his death on June 13th.
Okay, so for the family, I'm sure that is very comforting that at least they're accepting full responsibility. He did talk about how the training staff, they were at fault. We brought it up earlier. There's a Washington Post article that talks about the protocol for heat-related illnesses, even in the NCAA student athlete handbook. And it says immediate cold water immersion is actually what is I would say by most of the experts out there, they say that is what they advocate for, just throwing them in a cold pool full of ice. And then before you transport them anywhere, make sure that you drop their temperature a couple of degrees. When they got to the hospital with the young man, Jordan McNair, he was at 106 degrees. They put him in a cold tub with ice at the hospital, dropped his core temperature, I think, from 106 to 102. So they reportedly didn't do that. He didn't really go into detail about that, but there are no reports from in the ESPN reports or even from the hospital reports that they put him in a cold water tub immediately after he collapsed at 5 o'clock. Here is Damon Evans, the athletic director for Maryland, and he is being asked about DJ Durkin, the head coach of Maryland, who is on administrative leave as a result of all these allegations, and he is being asked about the future of DJ Durkin. Here's what he has to say.
As far as Coach Durkin and administrative leave, obviously we've hired an external review team to take a look at this, but as additional information comes forward, we will do what's appropriate. So we'll move in that manner.
The strength and conditioning coach, Rick Court, has also been fired. That comes from Damon Evans. They don't really know exactly right now how much of this DJ Durkin's culture that he set as a head coach, how much of this is how much of his culture is responsible for this, and how much of it could have been avoided if he had tried to change the culture. I mean, there was a culture of player abuse, which has been described in a lot of these reports. They had to drag the young man. Two trainers had to drag him across the finish line of the last sprint. And instead of taking him immediately to the training room, they walked him around for about 80 yards right after he got done. And then he collapses and has the seizure. And that's when they take him back to the training room. It just seems like there are little things. There's like, and the players say they were observing him with 30, 45 minutes into the workout, exhibiting the different symptoms of heat stroke and heat related illnesses. So, you know, they didn't recognize this and still they pushed him. Wes Anderson, another strength and conditioning coach, apparently was still yelling at him as he basically was not in control of his faculties. Now, I understand pushing guys to the limit, but it seems like they went past a certain line you're not supposed to cross, and not only humiliating players and pushing them past the limit, but to the point where if you're going to push players to that line, and hey, I've been pushed there too, then make sure that you follow proper protocol and do what is advised for for heat-related illnesses and for players who may have who pass out as a result of it, and players who throw up as a result of it. When all of these things happen because guys are exerting themselves to the nth degree, to the point where they've never physically exerted themselves and never felt that kind of pain when they hit that wall, then be ready with cold towels and with cold tubs to throw guys in there as a to make sure that you're following proper protocol and being as safe as possible. They didn't do that. Do you really? Here is Damon Evans, the Maryland athletic director, talking about that very subject.
Our athletic training staff did not take Jordan's temperature and did not apply a cold water immersion treatment. I expect additional findings when the Walters report is complete. That report will be made public. We have already taken immediate steps to put additional safeguards in place for all of our athletic practices and training, not just football.
There you go. So they understand that they did not put them in cold water, which is crazy. I swear I've been playing football in Texas a long time. We had cold towels with Mad Dog. They would have these tubs outside just full of cold towels, and you just throw cold towels on you, just with water that is freezing cold, but you love it. Drops your body temperature. You put like 10 of them on your body and just lay on the ground, and it would drop your core temperature. And they had cold tubs out there for guys who wanted to go get straight in the cold tubs. I remember that. And of course, in Texas, we probably take heat stroke and heat-related illnesses a lot more seriously than other places because it gets so damn hot here. And I grew up in Houston where sometimes it's so hot, we're like, nope, you got to work out inside. We can't work out outside. It's just too hot for any creature. They didn't take those precautions, and I don't know why. And now a young man is dead as a result. So DJ Durkin now, he is going to be on trial in the court of public opinion now, and it's all about his culture. And those ESPN reports, there is nothing to really combat them or refute them. That's all the public has to go on. Remember, that's how Urban Meyer started out, too. The reports were that he lied, that he covered up, covered up for a domestic abuser. He puts out a statement. Zach Smith does an interview. Courtney Smith's mom comes out against her own daughter. And then the court of public opinion starts to swing back a little bit in favor of Urban Meyer not being fired, but you know what? He should just be punished in some regard, but not fired. We don't know how much of this he knew about. With DJ Durkin, different situation, but the court of public opinion will still decide his fate. If they decide that he is, like I said, he's a bad person, he was just being an a-hole coach, and a-hole coaches are a dime a dozen. You could argue it's a job requirement for being a head coach is that you got to be a little bit of an a-hole. Go look at all the great ones like Popovich and Belichick and Vince Lombardi and Saban and Urban Meyer. We knew Urban Meyer was an a-hole. Now we're trying to decide whether he's a bad person. If you're a bad person, we don't need you around young people. We decided Art Browse was a bad person. We don't even want him in any of the Americas. We didn't even like him up in Canada coaching football. We don't want him, period, anywhere around, anywhere around the Americas at all. Like North America, South America, he had to go all the way over to Italy to coach football. And I think Joe Paterno would have suffered a similar fate, too. Like it would have been persona non grata. He'd have been ostracized. And that, I think, is the conversation that's happening in the court of public opinion. Is this guy just an a-hole? Because that's cool. We'll deal with that. That doesn't make you a bad person. If you're a bad person, I'm not saying that's fair. I'm just saying that is in the court of public opinion what's being decided. Because if they decide that you are a bad person, then the public wants to strip you of certain things. That's why you ever see these videos of people out there dropping like the N-bomb. Like just in their regular everyday society, they'll go out there and they'll get in an argument with somebody of color and they'll drop the N-bomb or they berate some minority person. And then people go on social media, they find out where they work, they they inform their job or their workplace, and those people are fired. Why are they fired? Because the public has decided that they're bad people. They're just period. It's like there's kind of that lynch mob that is happening right now too. It is a lynch mob mentality, but that's what Urban Meyer's got to deal with. We've all known Urban Meyer's been kind of shady. at Florida. We've all know he's been kind of shady. That's why, you know, that's why he needed the Tim Tebow balance of things with 31 different players were arrested. We've all known this about him. He had Greg Schiano on his staff and Kevin Wilson. Go look at the background of both of those guys. Kevin Wilson had to deal with allegations of player abuse when he was a head coach, and Greg Schiano allegedly knew about what was going on at Penn State when he was a young coach. Urban Meyer's always got a little shady stuff in his background. The Zach Smith stuff, too, which is, hey, we don't mind shady. All right. People get shady and people are perceived as a-holes all the time. But now people are going to decide if he's a bad person. He was covering up for a serial domestic abuser. People are going to say he's a bad person. And DJ Durkin, the same thing. That's what he's got to deal with now. And if you had a strength coach, Rick Court, on your staff who was throwing stuff at players and forcing players to eat until they threw up, and you're humiliating players in front of other guys and berating them and cussing them out in front of other players, that's considered humiliating. Honestly, it's downright hazing, and people are going to consider you to be a bad person. That's why that strength and conditioning coach has been fired. And we are making a judgment, an indictment on your character in that sense, and that's the court of public opinion. It's probably more powerful than it's ever been. And in terms of being able to affect someone's job status. And speaking of Urban Meyer, the Zach Smith thing, he was arrested for DUI in 2013. The charge was later reduced, but now there are people who are wondering if Urban Meyer knew about the 2013 DUI on top of the 2009 domestic violence incidents. And then the 2015 domestic violence incident, when he said that he knew about it, but he informed his superiors about it, and he put it through the proper channels, did what is required, not necessarily what is right, but he did what was required. And if this 2013 incident could be a pattern of reckless behavior, a guy like Urban Meyer should know about that. The judge that reduced Zach Smith's 2013 DUI was an Ohio State grad. And how about this? Urban Meyer lives in Dublin, Ohio, right outside, I guess it's right outside of Columbus. And Zach Smith was arrested in Dublin, where Urban Meyer lives. And it was in that Dublin court. So not saying Urban Meyer should have known about it, but considering his wife knew about a lot of this stuff because she was getting text messages from Courtney Smith, Zach Smith's wife, and pictures allegedly of, you know, domestic violence incidents. And Tom Herman's wife was helping, and Tom Herman also were helping out Courtney Smith. So the coaches' wives knew about it. The coaches all knew about Zach Smith and a lot of stuff that he did. And yet Urban Meyer, who's a control freak, just had no idea. That's plausible deniability, that he didn't know. That, you know what I mean? Like, he didn't know about the 2013 incident, even though it happened in Ohio. And that's just the DUI, which is not as serious these days as domestic violence, because we all know probably someone who has been arrested for DUI, friends and family members who have made a mistake. But it does show that Zach Smith may have not been worthy of getting so many different chances from Urban Meyer. So we're having a discussion about Urban Meyer. Now, Urban Meyer, either way, Urban Meyer will end up getting another job. But even the fake news by Jeff Snook over the weekend that Tom Herman was involved, and people were trying to make distinction about Tom Herman. Oh, man, that's Tom Herman. If he knew about it, he should have said something earlier. Well, I think when he knew about it, he did do something about it. And he admitted that, yeah, we gave her money. We were trying to help her out. You know, I don't know what they gave her money for. I think it was for legal counsel. But they probably gave her money, period, just get on your feet. Maybe because you don't need him. Because I'm sure that he may have been the breadwinner in the household, and in domestic violence incidents, it's hard to get from under the thumb of the abuser, especially when you're financially tied to them. And in 2009, she was pregnant, and so there's that tie as well. So at the time when Tom Herman didn't know about it, he did something. We don't know. In the 2015 incident happened, he was already gone by then. All he knew about and his wife knew about was the 2009 incident, and they probably at that point were like, oh, man, you shouldn't be with that dude, when they found that out. So, and that's when she wanted to get divorced from him. And the 2015 incident, like I said, happened after Tom Herman had already left. So I don't think anybody's tying that to him. But the fake news reports really just muddied the water, and that was the whole point of it. This guy, Jeff Snook, apparently he's kind of a propagandist, and he just wanted to muddy the water with some fake news about Tom Herman and him being the source of the Brett McMurphy report. And it worked. Some people still believe that, even though Brett McMurphy refuted the report, even though Tom Herman, Michelle Herman, even though they refuted it. And, you know, like Hitler once said, the bigger the lie, the more people will believe it. You just throw it out there, and you just now the court of public opinion, you just tainted the jury pool. You just poisoned the jury pool. Because now some people believe that, and it's like, well, it's not true. It's like, nope, I still believe it. And it's like, oh. So it did work, actually. If that was Urban Meyer and Ohio State's redirect and their misdirect, it did work from a certain point where you just like poison the information pool, and people now believe misinformation.
Well, it's like the saying, a lie makes it all the way around the world before the truth has a chance to put its pants on.
Exactly. So nobody cares about the report being true. Like, nah, it makes it, because it makes too much sense. It has to be true. Now, I agree. It's a great conspiracy theory, but there's no proof to back it up. But people are still going to believe it right now anyway. Like, nah, it makes too much sense. I like it. I'm going to believe it. And now, for some reason, it makes Ohio State, you know, them kind of the victim, like, you know, maybe Tom Herman was out to get them, even though you forget about the actual victim, Courtney Smith, and Ohio State. Even if what we know is true and we don't find out anything else, we do know that Urban Meyer knew about the 2009 incident and the 2015 incident, and he chose to do only what was the bare minimum requirement rather than do what was right and try to look into it, even though his wife knew all about the domestic abuse and all of the different issues and allegations, and other coaches' wives on the staff and other coaches as well. Yeah. So maybe he didn't want to know. I think there's a lot of stuff that maybe Urban Meyer does not want to know from his days at Florida. And that's what now people are going to try to indict him on, that you should know more. It's like same thing with Baylor, right? And same thing with Joe Paterno. Now we have heaped a much larger responsibility on these coaches who are making these ridiculous sums of money that you have. And Paterno wasn't making ridiculous sums of money. But we have now said there is a much larger responsibility now to whom much is given, much is expected. And you should know. And our boss can go, well, I didn't know. And everything I knew, I told this one person, and then that was all I was required to do. And I never did anything else, but I told the one person I was supposed to tell. And it's like, well, did you check up on it? When you reported that someone was raped by one of your players, did you ever go a couple of months later, hey, whatever happened to that the conversation we had about that guy raping that young lady on campus? What happened about that?
For those of you unfamiliar with what happened at Penn State.
Yeah, like, we got to ask, like, we need you to follow up. Yes, I know you get the bare minimum requirement about a decades-long scandal about the sexual abuse of children, Joe Paterno, but I need you to follow up on it. Just go follow up. I know. You got a lot going on, but I need you to follow up on that one. Those are serious. Michigan State, everybody, same things. Like, well, the one incident I heard about, I shot up the flagpole, and then that was it. Then I went about my life. It's like, well, did you follow up? That was a pretty serious allegation. Did you ask somebody what happened there? I mean, come on. We're talking about some of the most horrendous crimes that you can commit. Crimes against nature, rape, the sexual assault of young people, children. And it's like, oh, I told my AD, and that was it. Domestic violence. Oh, I told my AD, and then I moved on.
I told the homeless person to get a job.
And it's like, well, you are the head coach. You're the CEO. I'm going to need you to follow up. That's your job. So now we're expanding basically the job requirements for head coaches. And you know what? I got no problem with it. They make a ton of money. I got no problem with it. And they're working with young people. So they, you know what? Too much is given, much is expected, even more so for them. Okay, we'll come back. We'll do the Reliable Automotive Horn Top 20. Go behind the burnt orange curtain. We'll also do some Dallas Cowboys discussion. We'll dive into that. I want to talk about Zeke and his new role with that Cowboys offense. All that and more right here on the broadcast. This is the Horn, 104.9 and AM 1260. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Time to get to our Reliable Automotive Horn Top 20. Number 14, the USC Trojans. Let's do it.
It's the Horns College Football Top 20, brought to you by Reliable Automotive.
This is Carr, turns the corner, Sutter steps, still running, down inside the five, and Stephen Carr is the next guy at SC, and a terrific compliment to Jones.
Number 14, the USC Trojans.
All right, Texas has to play USC at home September 15th. That is going to be one of the biggest games of the season in college football, period, but definitely for the University of Texas. But on the USC side, you know, USC is having a quarterback battle themselves, a three-man quarterback battle, reportedly. And right now, JT Daniels, a true freshman, is reportedly, and he was an early enrollee as well. So this guy is the dark horse to win that quarterback job. But the scrimmage that they had over the weekend, I think he went 10 of 12 for four touchdowns. And it was a tight race. It was real muddled between three guys, Matt Fink, who was a sophomore, Jake Sears, and JT Daniels. And JT Daniels reportedly right now is in the lead, all right, to win that quarterback job. That'd be big. That'd be huge for a true freshman to win that job. And not saying it would last, but it would make, in my opinion, it would make USC a lot more vulnerable for a young, not only just a first-time starter, but a true freshman to win that job. That means their running game would have to be dominant just to take the pressure off of the young quarterback to make sure that, you know, that young quarterback doesn't have to look at some really complex defenses to make sure that teams aren't able to just blitz them and put a ton of pressure on them, force them into making mistakes. You got to make sure that your running game is on point. You know, they got Stephen Carr, who's projected to be the starting running back right now, but they lose Ronald Jones. Last year was the starting running back. He was a 1,000-yard rusher at over 1,500 yards. That's going to be big. So if JT Daniels is leading the quarterback competition, and you also have a, I would say, an unproven commodity at running back. We know USC is going to have some talent, but an unproven commodity there, that's not a good formula. You know what I mean? If you want to have a young quarterback, you at least want a running game you can depend on. Now, the offensive line for USC is going to be a veteran offensive line, so that may end up being the savior for the offense. But right now, you got a lot of unproven commodities at the skill positions for USC, and the quarterback may be the most unproven commodity. But a guy with a really high ceiling, of JT Daniels is playing at that kind of level to win the starting job as a true freshman. We talked about that on the 40 Acres. And you can start the first game of the first game of the season as a true freshman, or a redshirt freshman even, man, you're on the accelerated path of development, and you got a really, really high ceiling. We could be talking about that with a guy like JT Daniels, who's the number two rated pro style quarterback coming out this year. So, of course, really high ceiling, but unproven commodity. I think that could end up being the catchphrase for USC projecting them. I do like the O-line, but I'm not big fans of what they got on the outside, really, at wide receiver, and how they're going to maximize that if the quarterback position isn't playing at a high level. So I think the defense will be one of the best defenses in the country. I mean, right now people are projecting it to be top 15, top 20 defense. And the defensive backfield is going to be one of the most talented in the country as well. And, you know, last year they had a great front seven, a lot of injuries on that defensive line. This year they got another injury to linebacker. I think Port Augustine, supposed to be their all-world linebacker senior this year, he tore his meniscus. I don't know how long he's going to be out. He's been out all of training camp. But if he comes back healthy, even that front seven can end up being a force. I think this year the strength of that defense, which will still be one of the better defenses in the country, will be on the back end. It'll be with the defensive backs. The defensive line for them, though, I think they also, you know, they got a lot of veterans on the defensive line. It won't be what it was last year, though. The back end, they got projected starters. All their projected starters in their back seven, or all of them except one, I should say, are seniors. John Houston Jr. is a junior. John Houston is a junior. Cameron Smith Jr. Then it's Ajean Harris. He's a senior. Isaiah Langley's senior. Iman Marshall's a senior. Marvell Tate's a senior. So they got a lot of guys in the back end with veteran experience. I think that's going to go a long way for them, especially in the Pac-12, which is a pass-heavy conference. I don't see USC being as good as Stanford. I don't see them being, because Stanford's got Bryce Love, maybe the best overall offensive player in the country, could win the Heisman this year. I don't see them as being as good as Washington, who has, they don't have to play Washington, fortunately enough for them, unless they make it to the Pac-12 title game and have to play them. But I don't see them being as good as Washington in the Pac-12 either, because they have a veteran quarterback returning. And I think they also, Washington has a better defense overall than USC from top to bottom. So I think USC can contend, but we still don't know what Arizona is going to do with something. We don't know what Arizona State's going to do. We don't know how UCLA is going to look now under Chip Kelly. So much uncertainty in the Pac-12. We know USC is going to be talented, but it won't be experienced or proven talent. That's going to be the big story for them. All right, while we're talking college football, since we're talking about USC, we might as well go behind the burnt orange curtain. Let's talk about the latest transfers with the Texas defense and also the linebacking core, which is thinning out. What's Todd Orlando going to do to compensate for it? We'll go behind the burnt orange curtain and discuss it.
And they were all asking themselves the same question. What is behind that curtain?
All right, we talked about it earlier. Eric Cuffey and John Bonney, both those guys deciding to transfer. Is it a good sign or a bad sign for Texas that you have two veteran defensive backs who decide to transfer? I'm going to go out of my way and say that, you know, it's, this may be a good sign for Texas. And I know the first thing you think about is the lack of depth or a lack of experience depth in the back end. And I think that was a problem anyway. And I said the depth this year was different than it was last year. Last year, you had so much experience depth in the defensive backfield. It's no wonder that they had, you know, a year that a lot of people proclaimed they brought back DBU. Deshaun Elliott, Holton Hill, even Jason Hall and Antoine Davis played critical roles as role players in that secondary. Chris Boyd came on late. Brandon Jones came on late and played really well. Those guys are veterans in the secondary and now expect to be leaders in that secondary. So you had so much experience depth that, yeah, it's no wonder that Todd Orlando used that group, you know, to have the second best havoc rate of any defensive backfield in the country, which is the rate that they applied pressure. So those guys were veterans, so he used them in a lot of different situations, and he put them in a lot of different scenarios. Jason Hall was his hybrid linebacker slash safety, and the way he used John Bonney, too, in that dime package, in that lightning package. He was really, really versatile and very, very creative. Well, now he's got to get even more creative, because, and we're going to see his ability to develop talent. Because one of the things that I admired about Todd Orlando last year, how many guys did we notice had career years under Todd Orlando? That we've been watching these guys for 2-3 years on the 40 acres and waiting on them to take it to the next level, waiting for that light to go off. And Todd Orlando found a way to maximize so many different players where so many different guys had career years. Deshaun Elliott, Holton Hill, played the best ball we'd ever seen. Chris Boyd played the best ball we'd ever seen. You know what I mean? Charles Omenihu is in that conversation. Jason Hall and Antoine Davis, I think they're in that conversation too. Malik Jefferson won co-defensive player of the year. Puna Ford won defensive lineman of the year. Man, I know I'm missing guys, but even the way he used Breckenhager late in the season in that lightning package, and now we expect Breckenhager to be weaponized even more so in the Todd Orlando defense. You know, there were so many different guys that under Todd Orlando's tutelage and him being able to maximize their talents, they just had the best season that we've ever seen them play. And I think with even the young guys, and this is a guy, Todd Orlando, who's never really had a chance to develop talent within his system. I mean, keep that in mind. And when he got to U of H, he was only there for 2 years. And, you know, before that at, you know, Utah State and what was it? It was one of the Florida schools before that, Florida International, I believe. He was at those spots 2 years each, 2 years at Utah State, 2 years at you know, Florida International. The only place he was at a long time was UConn, where you can see him actually recruit talent to his system. We haven't been able to see Todd Orlando do that. So now that's going to be tested, because that 2018 defensive back class, which is tremendously talented, maybe one of the most talented, if not the most talented in the history of recruiting rankings so far, the young history of it. You know, with B.J. Foster and Caden Stearns and Anthony Cook, all expected to potentially crack the two deep, and definitely now expect to crack the two deep with these two transfers. DeMarvion Overshown, before he got hurt, was already working with the rover position at linebacker, weapon X for Todd Orlando, his hybrid linebacker safety. And then you guys got, you know, you got guys like Deshaun Jameson out there who could be a great D. You know, Deshaun Jameson is going to play anyway, because you need Deshaun Jameson in your return game. Deshaun Jameson, also from Houston Lamar, DB High, he's going to end up being the best kick returner Texas has. And he had four touchdowns on kick returns his senior year. He had three interceptions returned for touchdowns. He's electrifying. That's why they got him working offense as a slot receiver, and they got him working defense. He is that versatile and that talented. When he gets the ball in his hands, man, he's scary. They're going to use him, or they'd be foolhardy not to, on kick returns and punt returns, which means you're not going to redshirt him potentially, because I think he'd end up being your best kick returner, or one of them, punt returner or kick returner. And you're going to use him, so if he's going to play anyway, then you might as well find a way to manufacture depth with him in the defensive backfield, especially with guys leaving like Cuffy and John Bonney. Because now you're playing the numbers game with the roster, especially with the new red shirt rule. So, you know, I think I have full faith that Todd Orlando, and I have the research to back it up, and I'll break it out tomorrow. I don't know if we have time now. Oh, you know what? I can break it out next segment. I got to go look for it in my, you know, all my papers. All right. But Todd Orlando, the defensive position that he has, at least over his history as a defensive coordinator, that he has shown to be able to maximize the most and to develop the most consistently is defensive back. He's really good, and he likes them very versatile. And go look at his history with DBs, whether he's coached them or recruited them or recruited and coached them. Those guys have a really, really high success rate in terms of making it to the next level and being drafted, and him developing defensive backs into being really, really exceptional all-conference Sunday skill set caliber players. So I'll break out those numbers. I actually did that probably last year sometime. Turns out I think it may come in handy. Those stats may come in handy again, because that's that dying package, that lightning package now. Now it's going to be filled with a ton of young defensive backs potentially by the end of the season. You know, you got Chris Boyd, Devontae Davis is dealing with an injury, so I guarantee Anthony Cook is getting a lot of starting reps over there at that corner. We talked about DeMarvion Overshown before the injury getting starting reps at the rover because of the thin linebacker depth. We talked about Caden Stearns and him already getting starting reps at safety, even to start off training camp. B.J. Foster is one of those guys where everybody knew he was going to crack the two deep, but now you're looking at a guy that could potentially end up in a dime package playing a number of roles for you when you got six DBs out there. So that 2018 class, which some were held, celebrating and they heralded as the greatest defensive back class in modern day recruiting, we could see it pay dividends sooner rather than later. And I think the reason that John Bonney and Eric Cuffy ultimately transferred is because they didn't want to be role players anymore. They didn't want to be role players. Now, in Todd Orlando's defense, ask Antoine Davis, ask Jason Hall, hell, ask Brecken Hager, because he was a role player last year. He didn't play the entire season. You can be a role player in Todd Orlando's defense and still be very productive. Extremely productive, just as a role player, because that's how good he is, and that's how many reps you'll see in the Big 12, a pass-happy conference. But I think John Bonney knew the writing was on the wall. I'm going to be a role player, and I'm not going to be a starter. I got no shot at being a starter anymore. These young guys are coming on strong. Trust me, I remember it when they recruited Nathan Vasher, and when I saw Michael Huff and Cedric Griffin and A. Ross in the same room with me, I knew, okay, yeah, these youngsters, they're going to end up being NFL players one day. These guys got Thorpe Awards-type ceilings, but they're not taking my job. And that's ultimately when DBU came back. That's when we brought DBU back. That was the latest reincarnation of it, was when behind me was Michael Huff and Cedric Griffin and Aaron Ross, guys who I knew were going to win the Thorpe one day or be first-round draft picks. But the competition level went to such an extreme. It went to such an historic high that they pushed me to play as one of the best corners in the country as a Thorpe Award semifinalist, which was probably me overachieving. And they made me into a fourth-round draft pick. And I made those guys better because they had to compete at even a higher level. So the competition level just rose. It kept increasing every year until that defensive background was full of nothing but NFL players. At one point, by the time the 05 team rolls around, it's just NFL players in that room. And it stayed that way for like 4 or 5 years. And they're trying to get it back there. And I think with that 2018 class, that's a start. That's a huge start. So I wouldn't be concerned about it. I think it's a good sign. You may have to pay some early, you know, you got to pay the early price of having young guys playing your secondary. But I think ultimately it'll end up being a win for Texas, being a good thing. All right, we'll come back, get into some crosstalk. When we come back, I'll break out those numbers about Todd Orlando, and we'll give you the latest on the Urban Meyer, Zach Smith situation, all that and more right here on the broadcast. This is The Horn, 104.9 AM 1260. Sometimes I rhyme slow, sometimes I rhyme quick. All right, welcome back to the broadcast. Hanging out with my man KD for a little crosstalk. What's up, brother?
I'm good. I have an eye infection, so I'm on.
You got an eye infection?
Yeah, my left one.
That sucks.
So I'm nice little look at it, and then this one's all.
I can't tell.
Okay.
Yeah, well, look at it.
Oh, I got a bunch of eye drops and
nice
antibiotics, so I'm good to go.
Yeah, man, I want you to go blind one eye. Then you got to wear an eye patch.
Yeah, I'm fine.
That would be cool.
Kinda. Yeah.
You should wear an eye patch anyway. Anytime there's an eye injury, just wear an eye patch, bro.
Yeah.
People would love that. That would be your one excuse to wear an eye patch. You never get a chance to wear an eye patch as a grown man.
I don't want to be a pirate.
Right. Exactly. You should wear an eye patch, man. Chicks would dig because every chick would be like, so what happened to your eye?
It's like Kramer.
Yes.
It'd change up my look a little bit. I need that.
Everybody wore a cape that time, too.
New haircut. I need that.
Okay. I was just talking about the transfers. Eric Cuffey, defensive backs, yep. Eric Cuffey and John Bonney. They announced they were transferring via Twitter. I said, I'm not worried about it because I think they're transferring because they're looking at those young DBs and going, yeah, my role is going to be limited at best, which is not a bad thing because Jason Hall, role limited, Antoine Davis, role limited, and they played very well last year.
I agree.
But I think it's a good thing. I think it means those young DBs, that 2018 group, is going to make that start, that too deep, sooner rather than later.
I'm with you, and there was no animosity in either of their thank you letters.
Very true.
Classy kids.
Yeah.
That, you know what? It is what it is. And so I'm with you on that. I think that they probably see the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
And it's not even writing on the wall anymore. It's actually...
No, that guy's breathing down your neck.
We're starting to take the test.
If they... Yeah,
right. Whoa, he's flying through this thing.
If they do it like back in... We did it, Coach Akin. The starters would sit in the front. Like, it was like a row of desks, and the starters would sit in the front. And literally, if your starting job was taken... You know, the other guy would get to sit in your desk, like in the front. That's how you wanted it. Two starting corners, two starting safeties would sit in the front. There's a lot of pride in that because literally the guy that was trying to take your job was breathing down your neck.
Right.
He was right behind you.
That's what you want. And so if it was like an offensive lineman transfer, you may think, whoa, what's going on?
Exactly. Like, whoa.
This isn't because of opportunity.
Yeah, and coach would change around the depth chart too, walking in training camp. And, you know, during the season, it stays the same pretty much. But,
yeah.
Well, not lately, actually. But when I played, it was training camp. Was when the competition was there. I'll give you this though.
I like that hat.
Oh, you like this hat?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's a subtle. I've been into getting subtle Longhorn hats.
It's a good. Yeah, it is very subtle.
That don't necessarily have the burnt orange on it, which some people don't like. But I like the hats and gear that aren't necessarily burnt orange because the third of my damn closet is burnt orange, and
yeah,
I can't wear it all the damn time.
I'm with you. I mean,
I love it, but I can't wear it.
My
all the
closet
time.
Is loaded with orange.
It's loaded,
and a lot of it's just where we've worked, but also being fans and grads and all that
accumulated.
Yeah, that is not the early '90s screaming.
Mm-mm.
Paint everywhere.
No,
hat.
That's my thing. When I find a Longhorn, like any gear that's subtle, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm getting it. I like the subtle stuff now, man.
Right,
I'm getting
threw
older.
You off. I'm sorry.
No. But
we're getting older because we're talking stuff like that.
Of course.
Boy, I like that hat. Where'd you get that hat?
We talked about an eye patch to start off the segment. All right,
okay,
that's
fair enough.
Typical old man conversation. But one more thing to get Longhorn fans some optimism about these two guys transferring. If you look at the defensive coordinator years for Todd Orlando, since 2006, so 12 years, he's had 14 DBs drafted in that time span, I believe, that he has coached and or recruited. But he's never been anywhere for too long. Remember, he was at Utah State for like 2 years. He was at Florida National 2 years. U of H 2 years. Good. Yeah, he always kind of moves on. Yeah, he always gets a promotion pretty much.
Earl Thomas. Why did Earl leave after his redshirt sophomore year? Yeah. Well, he'd been here 3 years and he was ready.
I mean, he was too damn good. Yeah. And so this is the first time he's going to be able to actually coach players he recruits. I mean, we haven't really seen that coach to his him recruit guys to his system. And I think now that may be expedited.
And these type of guys, too. Exactly. Not Utah State type of guys.
Exactly. Now you're going to see that process expedited. Yeah.
And I also, it's why I think we saw some of the evolution from him last year. A large majority of that was because of the conference he was in and was having to adjust to that. But some of the adjustment, too, is I had some good guys at Houston, but I'm going to have some different guys at this level and have the opportunity to get some guys. Yeah. And we're seeing those, especially in the secondary, come in. And right away, I'm sure he's thinking like a good chemist or a good anything, a good cook.
Yeah.
Wow, man. I got good ingredients?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this is going to taste good.
That's a great point. See, you're a food guy, so I'll go back to that. I'll take it.
I was going to do chemist, and I'm like,
no, it's great.
What a chemist work with? Like drugs?
No, consider it like Dr. Dre, right? Dr. Dre got better. When he got a guy like Eminem, he was like, oh, man, watch me work wonders with this guy.
Right.
Because, you know, now I got talent to match like how my IQ and my acumen. And I think Tyler Lenz the same way. He's got talent now to match it. He could end up doing some, you know, some historic stuff here at Texas.
Who's Bernie Taupin and Elton John? I mean,
there you go. That's right.
They found each other.
There you go. Michael Jackson.
Dre's. He maybe is one of the best producers of all time.
Exactly.
People don't say he's one of the best lyricists.
No,
of all
it's
time,
Quincy. It's Quincy Jones and Michael Jackson, and Thriller was the result.
Yeah.
Right. And that Off the Wall, and that all, and that Quincy Jones and MJ. There you go. All right. There you go. More conversation like that with my man KD and Chad coming up next. I want to thank my man at the Thing Radio, Brian, for hooking us up.
Hey, where'd you get that hat?
Remember, the revolution will not be televised. We're talking about right here on the broadcast. Love you guys. Have a good night. Peace. Hope you're ready for the next episode.